I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Failing grade.
She's sort of a next level sort of abortion advocate, and that's why this appointment is so troubling. And her comments, her remarks, her written criticism of the pro-life movement and pro-life people have been very, very public.
Church leaders and the lay faithful demand answers from Notre Dame amid the controversial appointment of a pro-abortion professor. New numbers, a closer look at an annual report on abortion in America. And all roads lead to Rome. Learn more about an initiative to protect babies that dates from the 12th century. Multiple U.S. bishops are calling for the University of Notre Dame to rescind its appointment of an abortion advocate as head of the school's Asian Studies program. Bishop Kevin Rhodes from the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend, expressed his, quote, dismay and strong opposition to the appointment, adding the move is causing a scandal to the faithful of the diocese and beyond. Bishop Robert Barron from the Diocese of Winona, Rochester, Minnesota, joined in. He says Professor Susan Osterman is a sharp critic of the pro-life position and those who advocate for it. And Archbishop Samuel Aquila from the Archdiocese of Denver says, in part, quote, the decision truly tarnishes Our Lady's University and what it means to be Catholic. Attorney and pro-life policy expert Mary Fiorito recently wrote an opinion piece urging Notre Dame to rescind the appointment of the abortion advocate. Writing in the Washington Examiner, she says, in part, quote, Osterman's appointment to such a prestigious role at a Catholic university, despite her well-documented support for elective abortion, is a contradiction to Notre Dame's deeply Catholic legacy. Yes, some political issues are nuanced or less morally absolute. But the church is clear that her teaching on abortion is unchanged and unchangeable, unequivocally a grave sin that no Catholic can morally support, participate in, or advocate. And so it is the hill upon which Notre Dame must die. We recently spoke with the author of this piece. For more, we turn to Mary Fiorito, the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Mary, thank you for being with us. First off, tell us a little bit more about Professor Susan Osterman. What are some of the things she has said about pro-lifers and abortion?
Well, you know, the concerning thing about Professor Osterman is she's not sort of your run-of-the-mill professor who says, you know, I'm personally opposed to abortion, but, or I'm pro-choice. She's really been very actively involved in promoting abortion and also in an extremely troubling sort of twist, you know, degrading crisis pregnancy centers and writing op-eds that criticize the work of crisis pregnancy centers and frankly tell falsehoods about what pregnancy centers do and the women that they help. So she's sort of a next level sort of abortion advocate. And that's why this appointment is so troubling. And her comments, her remarks, her written criticism of the pro-life movement and pro-life people have been very, very public. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to understand why Notre Dame would give her this kind of honor and this kind of platform, knowing the sorts of views that she has.
I think you're exactly right. Could you go a little bit more in depth on what the reaction at Notre Dame has been from students, faculty, and alumni? How are they responding?
Well, it's really been very encouraging, actually, to see the number of alumni who have spoken out against this. Just yesterday, there was a wonderful letter by the former recipients of the Evangelium Vitae Award, which is given by the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture. It is the most preeminent pro-life award that can be given in this country to pro-life Catholics. And most of the recipients of that award or their family members, if the award member was deceased, have spoken out against this, saying, you know, it is hard enough to be pro-life in a world that is largely very antagonistic to pro-life people. And now we feel like you're turning on us. It's like turning on a family member. Mm-hmm. So it's really been just very encouraging to see the courage with which people have spoken out. dozens of bishops now and archbishops have asked Father Dowd, the president of Notre Dame, to rescind the appointment. So there really is a groundswell of support for this not going through, but we'll have to see at the end of the day what the administration is going to do.
Now, your article highlighted that two other times a high-profile abortion story hit the University of Notre Dame. Can you tell us a little bit more about these examples?
Yes, you know, so, and I distinguish between these two. The first is the presentation that then Governor Mario Cuomo of New York did back in 1984 when my husband was a sophomore at Notre Dame. And essentially he laid out the, what we would now call the, I'm personally opposed, but position for Catholic politicians. And he said very clearly, my wife and I, we would never consider aborting one of our own children, but we can't make that decision for somebody else. Now, that was an academic forum in which students could ask questions. They could critique the speaker. It wasn't giving the speaker an honor, an award, or a platform, which is what our bishops would say is kind of a step too far. The second that I cite in my article is awarding President Barack Obama an honorary law degree from Notre Dame. He spoke at the graduation and then was given an honorary doctor of laws. And his own professor from law school, Professor Marianne Glendon, who was then ambassador to the Holy See for the United States, she declined accepting an award alongside him on the stage. And again, this was not somebody who she just knew by reputation. It was one of her former students. And she said, you know, the bishops have been so clear about this particular topic, saying institutions, Catholic universities, Catholic, you know, agencies should not be giving awards, platforms, or honors to people who support abortion. And of course, we know with Barack Obama, his position on abortion was so extreme, he earned a 100% approval rating from Planned Parenthood, and also even opposed partial birth abortion, which, you know, the vast majority of Americans just thought was just simply too gruesome to be something that we could support, even if you were, you know, generally pro-choice. So those are the two examples I cite. And I don't know why Notre Dame has chosen to put itself in this kind of position again. It's very curious to me.
Now, this scandal comes as well-known sociologist Christian Smith left his job at the University of Notre Dame late last year. Among the reasons is because he says the school has lost its Catholic mission. Mary, what do you think about this? Is he right?
Oh, you know, I respect the professor. I think he's, you know, a very esteemed academic. And I agree with some of the points that he makes in his article. But I don't think Notre Dame could be looked at in the same way some other Catholic institutions that have really become secular have become. You know, you saw that beautiful example of the two engineering students who built a chapel out of ice and snow, and 2,000 students stood out in the cold to attend Mass. So that is not an institution that's lost its Catholic identity. But I think, you know, when they engage in activities like giving a platform to a pro-abortion professor who's, again, very well known for her opposition to church teaching, then it becomes just sort of an issue of either confusion or scandal or both for the faithful. Which Notre Dame do we believe? The 2,000 kids at the Ice Chapel or the Notre Dame that promotes a professor who opposes even, you know, pregnancy-free help services for poor women? It's hard to reconcile those two things.
And Mary, keeping this on the students, what message do you think an institution is giving to the students? And is there anything they can do to mitigate what they're doing?
Well, again, I think it's a mixed message. I think they're saying on the one hand, you know, we love our Lord and our Lady so much. I mean, Notre Dame means Our Lady. Notre Dame is known as Our Lady's University. We love her so much that we'll stand out in sub-zero temperatures and we'll build a chapel out of ice and snow in her honor. But on the other hand, you know, yet we'll still uphold someone, we'll promote someone whose personal views are just so abhorrent to what the church teaches about the dignity of the human person and the human being. And so I'm not sure that students will be able to reconcile those two things with themselves. So it really is a matter of the identity, but also the message that it's sending to its student body, to professors who might want to come and work there. I think Notre Dame really needs to take a hard look at what they want to be and vis-a-vis their Catholic identity.
Yeah. Well, Mary, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
A new report reveals our country remains sharply divided on life issues. This is the 13th annual report from National Right to Life, or NRLC. The report shows entering 2026, the country is divided between states that have moved to protect women and unborn children and those that have not. 25 states and Washington, D.C. now guarantee a so-called right to abortion, while 24 states have enacted laws to protect unborn children at some point. A central focus of this year's study is a rise of chemical abortion. NRLC says in 2023, chemical abortions were 63% of all abortions. The rise is due in part to the ease by which abortion pills can be mailed into every state, regardless of state law. The report also recounts the release of a study last year by the Ethics and Public Policy Center. After reviewing hundreds of thousands of insurance claims from women, the study found nearly 11% experienced serious adverse events or complications from taking abortion pills. We recently spoke with the head of National Right to Life about their findings. For more, we turn to Carol Tobias from the National Right to Life Center outside Washington, D.C. Carol, this is the 13th year NRLC has conducted its abortion report. Did anything surprise you about this year's findings?
I don't know that there was a surprise. What we have seen, unfortunately, is that, most abortions now, almost two-thirds, are being performed through the abortion pill, which is very sad. Women are taking it, being told that it's safe and there's no problem. And, we're hearing too many stories of women who are being injured physically, psychologically, because they were not prepared for what actually happens to them as well as their baby.
It has been terrible to see. Were there other things that stood out to you most about the 2026 report?
Well, one of the big things that we're really excited about is that in that report, we go into depth explaining what our new legislation would do. We are asking states to introduce and try to pass what we call the APPLE Act, which is the Abortion Pill Provider Liability and Education Act. It would require that those who are performing abortions or sending abortion drugs into states, sending them directly to women, would still be responsible. They have to make sure that the woman knows all the possible consequences. But also, if something goes wrong during that abortion, and we're seeing, roughly 10% of women are saying that they had some complications, some severe problem, that those women would have the right to sue the provider of that abortion drug. So we think that's a great way to, first of all, make sure women understand what they're getting into before they even start. It's not a safe, simple process. But also, hopefully, the providers and even their insurance companies would decide it's really not worth the risk. So that was one of the big things that we wanted to highlight in the report, that this legislation is available, and we're hoping that we can get the states to start passing it.
That's great. What are the chances that it will become law?
Well, we've got two states that have introduced it, Washington and Ohio, and we're, going to be waiting. Granted, I mean, Washington is a tough state, so not a lot of optimism there. But this is also a great educational tool. If people can start talking about, did you hear that a bill was introduced that would say a woman can sue the abortion pill provider when something goes wrong with the abortion pill? And then you suddenly have people thinking, wait a minute, is there a problem with the abortion pill? And if there is, then she should be able to sue. And hopefully it's also a great educational act, a talking point, just to start letting people know that this is not the safe, easy method that they are being told.
Indeed, and staying on this topic of legislation and education, the report also included some interesting historical data about the pro-life Hyde Amendment. And how many lives have been saved thanks to this initiative? Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys included in the report?
Well, the Hyde Amendment this year is 50 years old. Introduced in 1976 by freshman Congressman Henry Hyde of Illinois, it has survived through Democratic and Republican administrations, through Democratic and Republican-controlled Congresses. It's a great piece of legislation. We know that more than 2 million babies have been saved because federal tax dollars were not used to end their lives. The women, chose life for their babies. Before the Hyde Amendment, our government actually was paying for hundreds of thousands of abortions, in the few years leading up to that after Roe. So it's a great bill, and we really want to highlight that this has been in effect for 50 years, and even at the time when it was adopted, pro-abortion Democrats supported it, saying that, we support abortion, but taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for it. And unfortunately, those Democrats wouldn't even be welcome in the Democratic Party of today.
Yes. Before we let you go, we have about 30 seconds left. Are there any other stories that you're following?
Well, I think we also need to make sure that people understand that these abortion pills being mailed into homes now with no real accountability are being sent to men who want their wife or girlfriend to get an abortion, even if she doesn't want it. It's being sent to moms who, unfortunately, are giving it to their girls. So we really do have to focus more on the pill and stopping it and making sure people realize it is not safe nor easy.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for the work that you do.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
An Arizona judge strikes down 3 state pro-life laws, including a law that protected women by requiring in-person doctor visits before receiving abortion medication. The judge says the pro-life measures violate the state's constitution. Arizona's Republican House Speaker and Senate President spoke up against this move, expressing support for the pro-life laws. They add abortion advocates were attempting to get rid of health and safety regulations through amendments to the state constitution. Pro-life advocates are expected to appeal the ruling. Some encouraging pro-life news out of Missouri. The state's House of Representatives has approved the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act.
With the yeas being 103 and the nays being 40, House Committee substitutes for House Bills 1667 and 2294 are third read and passed.
The legislation seeks to ensure that a baby born alive during an abortion procedure will receive the same life-saving care as any other child. State Representative Holly Jones, one of the sponsors of the bill, says the measure is rooted in common sense.
A baby that makes it out of an abortive attempt gets every life-saving measure given to a child born at the same gestational period to a mother that wanted that baby. Intent means nothing when a child is outside the womb. The arguments against the bill show just how far society has fallen. Children, regardless of intent, when born, deserve life. And if, for whatever reason, weren't going to make it, they deserve palliative care, comfort, a warm lamp. For the physician who took an oath to at first do no harm, stands by that oath and provides it. And knows that if he or she doesn't, there are consequences, just like there are consequences if they weren't to provide it to another child in the delivery room. Circumstance, intent, and place that these procedures are happening doesn't matter. The child's alive and breathing. We owe it to it to give it care and save its life if possible.
Jones, chairman of the Children and Families House Committee, later spoke with EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. She says it is time for Missouri to join several other states that have a mechanism in place to report when a baby survives an attempted abortion.
Studies have shown that this is back in 2024, that's the latest statistics we have. But in those 8 states alone, 455 babies were born out of abortive attempts. Those babies deserve the utmost of care. And Missouri is in a position that we must provide that, especially with what we're looking at going forward.
The legislation also allows civil lawsuits against anyone who assists with or helps to facilitate an illegal chemical abortion. Jones says the measure is designed to protect women from coercion by partners or family members.
We know from our research and studies that have been done, not just in the United States, but worldwide, that many women that have abortions are pressured into it, whether that's by an intimate partner or a mom or a dad or a family member, et cetera. And we wanted to make sure that women that decided to go through with an abortion, it was their decision and there was no coercion involved.
Additionally, those in violation who commit any overact that kills a baby that has survived abortion will be considered guilty of first-degree murder. Serious penalties will be enforced on those who witness violations and fail to report them. This includes those who commit infanticide. In Missouri, abortion is legal up until fetal viability. This comes after voters approved the so-called Reproductive Rights Amendment back in November of 2024. Missourians will vote on abortion again this November after Republican lawmakers put forward a new measure seeking to ban abortion with limited exceptions. Jones says the goal is to save as many babies as possible.
I want no abortions at all, but I also want to save as many babies as we can. And right now, with the lax abortion laws that we have, which are basically non-existent, we have to make sure that we have something in place that, you know, will save as many as we can. I really hope that Missouri voters and the pro-life, you know, communities, they show up. And I think they will, because in the prior Amendment 3, so much was hidden and so much was just not brought to the forefront about what it really did. And so this Amendment 3 does restore the protections for mothers that are having abortive procedures in case something goes wrong and they have medical emergencies and things like this. It holds physicians accountable.
Jones also had an important message she wanted to relay to our viewers in Missouri.
If you all have any questions or you're confused about something, please do not hesitate to reach out to your legislator. We work for you. And if you have questions, we are here for you. And if you call your legislator and they don't want to talk to you, you can call my office and I will add you to my list and we will absolutely have a conversation.
Coming up, Centuries of Safety, an initiative to protect young children in Rome that started in the 12th century. Welcome back to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan. The fight for the unborn is not new. In fact, one pro-life initiative dates back to the 12th century and a historic hospital in Europe. EWTN Vatican contributor Zofia Schubach has more.
A tradition that has saved abandoned children for centuries.
Without any doubt, this is a sign of hope, because abandoning newborn infants often means depriving them of their chance to survive.
Foundling wheels, also known as baby hatches, boxes, or windows of life, appeared in Italy in the late 1100s. Foundling wheels were wooden rotating cylinders inside of a window-like structure built on the outside wall of hospitals or churches. When a mother found herself in a situation where she couldn't or didn't want to keep her baby, she could leave the baby in the foundling wheel. She would turn it and ring a bell to alert someone inside.
Rome's Tiber River, although today a nice view or daily walk, once was a death sentence for unwanted babies. Pope Innocent III found this to be unacceptable and instructed for a foundling wheel to be built in 1198 next to the Tiber River at the oldest hospital in Europe, Santo Spirito in Sassia. The Santo Spirito Hospital was taken in between 800 and 1,000 abandoned newborns every year. This is the foundling wheel that saved thousands of babies. It was the very first one ever built. If you've ever been to Rome, chances are you've walked right past it without even noticing. It sits on the Borgo Santo Spirito, right around the corner from Vatican City. Founding Wheels became widespread in Italy more than any other European country. This one here continued operating until 1870 due to changing social policy. But this wheel started a network of infant nurseries around the continent. Hospitals and churches around Europe not only took abandoned children in, but also helped them get to foster families around the country.
Although they are no longer wooden rotating wheels, modern baby hatches are still active around Europe today. One can be found at the Hospital of Policlinico Castellino in Rome.
The baby box, as our founding wheel is called, was built in 2006, about 20 years ago. It was created to help mothers in difficulty, unable to take their child with them, and so to save newborn life. Since the baby box was created, only one infant has been entrusted to our founding wheel, and this occurred in 2007, and the baby was 3 months old.
The baby is immediately taken inside for medical evaluation and basic care. From there, the case is handled through standard hospital and child protection procedures.
During the hospital stay, the infant receives a test to evaluate health status, okay, several tests. And subsequently, social services are activated to report the event to the juvenile court so that the baby can be entrusted to a protective facility or to an adoptive family.
Today, hospitals like Policlinico Castellino and other hospitals around the world use modernized versions of baby hatches inspired by this one, continuing to show mothers that there is always an alternative option. In Rome, Zofia Tubak for EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
As a reminder, you can see the full version of this inspiring story this week on EWTN's Vaticano program. It airs Sunday at 4 p.m. Check EWTN.com for other showtimes. And before we let you go, I wanted to take this time to wish you a very blessed and grace-filled Lent. I'll be taking time these Fridays to fast for women in unexpected pregnancies and for a conversion of heart across our nation so that one day abortion will be unthinkable. I hope that you'll join me in this and know of my prayers for you that you may walk closer with Christ this Lenten season. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTNnews.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.